I leaned forward and checked the section that ran above the front seats. I stabbed the vinyl upward until I felt the underside of the roof, all the way across the width of the car. Nothing there. Nothing in the next section either. But the section above the rear seats had paper hidden in it. I could even judge the size and weight. Legal size paper, maybe 8 or 10 stacked sheets. I got out of the back and slid into the driver's seat and looked at the gasket. Put some tension into the vinyl and picked at the edge. I got a fingernail under the rubber and eased it down into a little mouth a half inch long. Scraped my other hand sideways across the roof, and the vinyl obediently pulled out from under the gasket and gave me enough of a hole to get my thumb into. I worked my thumb backward, and I had gotten about 9 inches unzipped when I was suddenly lit up from behind. Bright light, harsh shadows. The road came in over my right shoulder, so I glanced across at the passenger door mirror. The glass was cracked. It was filled with multiple sets of bright headlights. I saw the etched warning. Objects in mirror are closer than they appear. I twisted around in the seat and saw a single set of high beams sweeping urgently left and right through the curves, a quarter mile back, coming on fast. I dropped my window an inch and heard the distant hiss of fat tires and the growl of a quiet V8 kicked down into second gear. The Cadillac, in a hurry. I stabbed the vinyl back into place. No time to secure it under the gasket. I just shoved it upward and hoped it would stay there. The Cadillac came right up behind me and stopped hard. The headlights stayed on. I watched in the mirror and saw the door open and Beck step out. I put my hand in my pocket and clicked the Beretta to fire. Duffy or no Duffy, I wasn't interested in a long discussion about voicemail. But Beck had nothing in his hands. No gun, no Nokia. He stepped forward, and I slid out and met him, level with the Saab's rear bumper. I wanted to keep him away from the dents and the scratches. It put him about 18 inches from the guys he had sent down to pick up his son. "Phones are back on." "The cell, too?" He nodded. "But look at this." He took the little silver phone out of his pocket. I kept my hand around the Beretta, out of sight. It would blow a hole in my coat, but it would blow a bigger hole in his coat. He passed me the phone. I took it, left-handed, held it low in the spread of the Cadillac's headlights, looked at the screen. I didn't know what I was looking for. Some cell phones I had seen signaled a voicemail message with a little pictogram of an envelope. Some used a little symbol made up of two small circles joined together by a bar at the bottom, like a reel-to-reel tape, which I thought was weird, because I guessed most cell phone users had never seen a reel-to-reel tape in their lives. And I was pretty sure that the cell phone companies didn't record the messages themselves on reel-to-reel tape. I guessed they did it digitally, inert inside some kind of a solid-state circuit. But then, the signs at railroad crossings still show the sort of locomotive that Casey Jones would have been proud of. "See that?" Beck said. I saw nothing. No envelopes, no reel-to-reel tapes, just the signal strength bar and the battery bar, and the menu thing and the names thing. "What?" "The signal strength. It's only showing 3 out of 5. Normally I get 4. "Maybe the tower was down. Maybe it powers up again slowly. Some kind of electrical reason." "You think?" "There are microwaves involved. It's probably complicated. You should look again later. Maybe it'll come back up." I handed the phone back to him, left-handed. He took it and put it away in his pocket, still fretting about it. "All quiet here?" "As a grave." "So it was nothing, not something." "I guess. I'm sorry." "No, I appreciate your caution. Really. Just doing my job. Let's go get dinner." He went back to the Cadillac and got in. I clicked the Beretta back to safe and slid into the Saab. He backed up and turned in the road and waited for me. I guessed he wanted to go in through the gate together, so Paulie would only have to open and close it once. We drove back in convoy, 4 short miles. The Saab rode badly, and the headlights pointed way up at an angle, and the steering felt light. There were 400 pounds of weight in the trunk, and the corner of the headliner fell down when I hit the first bump in the road and flapped in my face the whole way back. We put the cars in the garages, and Beck waited for me in the courtyard. The tide was coming in. I could hear the waves behind the walls. They were dumping huge volumes of water on the rocks. I could feel its impact through the ground. It was a definite physical sensation, not just sound. I joined Beck, and we walked back together and used the front door. The metal detector beeped twice, once for him, once for me. He handed me a set of house keys. I accepted them like a badge of office. Then he told me dinner would be served in 30 minutes, and he invited me to eat it with the family. I went up to Duke's room and stood at the high window. 5 miles to the west, I thought I saw red taillights moving away into the distance. 3 pairs of lights. Villanueva and Elliot and Duffy, I hoped, in the government Tauruses. 10:18. Assignment completed. But it was hard to be sure if they were real because of the glare from the lights on the wall. They might have been spots in my vision from fatigue or from the bang on the head. I took a fast shower and stole another set of Duke's clothes, kept my own shoes and jacket on, left my ruined coat in the closet. I didn't check for email. Duffy had been too busy for messages, and at that point we were on the same page anyway. There was nothing more she could tell me. Pretty soon, I would be telling her something, just as soon as I got a chance to rip the headliner out of the sob. I wasted the balance of the 30-minute lull and then walked downstairs. Found the family dining room. It was huge. There was a long, rectangular table in it. It was oak. Heavy, solid, not stylish. It would have seated 20 people. Beck was at the head. Elizabeth was all the way at the other end. Richard was alone on the far side. The place set for me put me directly opposite him, with my back to the door. I thought about asking him to swap with me. I don't like sitting with my back to a door. But I decided against it and just sat down. Paulie wasn't there. Clearly, he hadn't been invited. The maid wasn't there either, of course. The cook was having to do all the scut work, and she didn't look very pleased about it. But she had done a good job with the food. We started with French onion soup. It was pretty authentic. My mother wouldn't have approved, but there are always 20 million individual French women who think they alone possess the perfect recipe. "Tell us about your service career," Beck said to me, like he wanted to make conversation. He wasn't going to talk about business, that was clear, not in front of the family. I guessed maybe Elizabeth knew more than was good for her, but Richard seemed fairly oblivious. Or maybe he was just blocking it out. What had he said? "Bad things don't happen unless you choose to recall them." "Nothing much to tell," I said. I didn't want to talk about it. Bad things had happened, and I didn't choose to recall them.